It's Mother's Day on Sunday. Okay.
Thanks for reminding me. I got to get to work.
Mom and for your wife. Yeah, it's coming
no
up.
No doubt.
So do not forget.
No doubt. I'm under the gun. It's a big one for me. Okay. I'm not worried about my mom. I'm worried about my wife. She takes this very personal. I got to get her some good stuff. Oh, baby. What's up? Chris Sims unbuttoned. It's Paul Burmeister. It's Chris Sims. What's up, dude? How you doing? Do you have a good Mother's Day?
I'm doing great. We had a really good Mother's Day. After listening to that, I've got to ask you right away, what'd you come through with? What'd you get your wife?
So I got done with that podcast on Thursday, and I started to call around for flower shops and things like that here in the area. Couldn't get anything. So it was like full-fledged panic mode. And then I'm going, oh, man, you know, there's no stores for me to go walk in around the area that I could just figure something out on the fly. So I had to put on the old apron, Paul, and cook some breakfast and treat my wife like the queen she is on Mother's Day.
What'd you make?
I had that all. I let her sleep in. I made sausage, had her coffee and espresso ready, made her celery juice, and then I made her Ezekiel toast, with avocados and onions on it. That's one of her favorites. So I made that for her Mother's Day. Yep. And trust me, when I tell you, Paul, I can't cook shit. I mean, unless it's on a grill and it's a burger or a steak, there's no hope for me. So it took me a long time to get that all together and make it look presentable.
So I'm sure she appreciated the effort, but did she actually enjoy the meal?
I think she did. And like, she actually took a picture of the meal and like everything and sent it to my family. And she told me it was one of the best gifts I've ever given her. So it's pretty good. I'm winner. I still owe her like a 15-minute massage. I was supposed to give that to her on the couch on Sunday night, and we both kind of got tired and went to sleep. So I got to do that at some point this week.
So 2 days later, are you still doing the victory lap? Are you still winning, or is that too far in the rearview mirror?
No, wait, it's gone. It's good. All done with. I mean, yeah. I mean, that was it. I mean, I did that. And then, you know, the other thing we did, I took her to Shake Shack. She didn't want to cook any meals that day. So we did a little Shake Shack run. We ate the food in the car. We actually like pulled up to a park and just ate in a parking lot with the windows open, because that's the reality of the world we're in right now. But that was that.
And classy, then, you know, Chris.
Hey, it's on to the next one, baby. It's on to the next one. What's next? Birthday, Valentine's Day. I'm so sick of damn holidays. Holy crap.
Well, it sounds like you pivoted very well. So congratulations on how you handled
How'd you
Mother's
do?
Day
did, you, there. Did you do okay over there, Rico Suave? What'd you do?
I did. I did very well. You know what? I did well by having my boys do something really nice for us. So I copied one of her tricks when we're dating. She will have a nice picture of us printed and just get like nice fold over cards, put the picture on front, and then write something on the inside. And I completely stole that from her. And the boys do that for every Mother's Day. And I kind of accidentally read what they wrote to her. And it was so good and like so sincere and heartfelt. I'm worried that I'm going to be let down on Father's Day, because I don't think it's going to be nearly as good as what they wrote to their mom this weekend.
But of course not. I mean, your dad.
But not,
they
it,
don't
it's
love,
not even going to be
they
close.
They don't love like, you as much as mom. I mean, mom always wins.
I know, but it was just like a hard dose of reality. Like, I was happy for her that she got those words, but man, dad's going to be disappointed next month. So we can check back on that later.
All right, we will check back on that. I'd love to see that. Her card next to your card.
No.
Come Father's Day and see how it compares.
Yeah. I'm worried. The good news is that we have the schedule. We have the NFL schedule to talk about besides Mother's Day gifts, which was just kind of an appetizer here. And you know what? For the middle of May, Chris, I'm looking at our rundown here, things we're going to cover. This is a fun show. We've got a lot of cool stuff to go over in the next hour. I know you're as excited about it as I am, and probably put in the same amount of time poring over some of your answers. But let's get it started this way. I know you've talked with Florio on PFT in the mornings about the schedule, but you and I haven't talked about it yet. And there are so many different ways we can do it. Let's start this way. I want three games week one on a packed week one schedule that you are most excited to watch.
Well, okay. I mean, listen, like the Captain Obvious, the first game of the year is the one I'm probably more excited than any, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. I don't even want to talk about it because it's so obvious. But, you know, with those two football teams, the Chiefs, the fact that that great stadium and fan base is going to get to unveil their Super Bowl banner and do all that. I mean, that's already the loudest stadium in the world. So that's going to like register on the Richter scale for an earthquake that night, let alone it's two of the most talented quarterbacks in the game and the two best players maybe in the game. I mean, they're in that conversation. So I love that. Hey, I know, of course, I love Breeze and Brady. I mean, I want to see what the Bucks are going to look like in this new team and all of that. Totally excited about that, too. I mean, come on. The star power down in Tampa Bay, can Brady, you know, kind of rearrange the thoughts on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization, all of those? You know, those are obvious ones, right? But, like, I got three others written down that are, like, kind of below the radar that, you know, I just think deserve some attention. You know, one right off the bat that I think is a little off the beaten path is I'm excited to see Seahawks and Falcons. I am, for two reasons. One, there's history between these two teams, right? You know, the year the Falcons went to the Super Bowl, they beat Seattle, you know, that's right, up in Seattle at one point. And then, of course, Seattle had to come there for the playoff game and got blown out. But there's familiarity between the coaching staffs, too. I mean, Dan Quinn comes from Seattle. You know, can the Atlanta Falcons kind of reestablish themselves as a team as far as relevancy in the NFC? And then we know the Seahawks are one of those teams that we're going to put in the Super Bowl category, and they got to go to the East Coast. So that's one that jumps out to me. Browns Ravens would be another one, Paul, just because interdivision, I think the Browns are primed and ready to go. Are the Ravens going to be, you know, all offseason, we're the number one seed, we can't get beat and fall into a trap? So I'm excited about that. And, you know, Cowboys Rams, I would say, like, that would be the roundabout way of the last one that I'm excited about. I mean, one, just because I want to see this LA stadium. I'm excited to see that. Yeah. And the Cowboys with Mike McCarthy as a new head coach. And, you know, I'm expecting Dak Prescott to be there as the starting quarterback. But, you know, Dallas has a huge following in the Southern California area. They have their training camp in Oxnard, California. There's just a lot of Texas people in general in Southern California. I learned that even my time at the University of Texas. So that is one, just because of the spectacle, I am very interested to see two star power teams in the Cowboys and the Rams.
You listed some really good ones. And what jumped out to me right away, Chris, when I kind of tackled this assignment, as I took my eyes down the week one schedule, it was like, oh my gosh, which one of these am I going to leave off? I mean, there are like seven or eight games. I mean, it's as stacked at week one as I can remember. I'm a little embarrassed to admit the ones I'm looking forward to the most: Tampa Bay, New Orleans, Miami, New England.
That's fine.
It's so obvious. I was hoping, I wrote those down right away, and I'm like, I'm going to hope to push those aside and have something better and more creative. And like, who am I kidding? If I can only watch two games,
right?
Opening weekend, right, I'm going to watch Brady against New Orleans. I'm going to see how the quarterback situation looks for the Patriots without Brady, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm with you. I hear you there too. And of course, the Dolphins, like, I think Tua will be in there. I mean, you're already seeing his jersey sales. They're selling like hotcakes down there in South Florida. So again, if he just shows any glimmer of hope in the preseason, Tua will be the starter against the Brady replacement in New England. You know, and Paul, there's nothing wrong with the obvious answers. I mean, you know, I just wanted to change it up a little bit. But, you know, the new timers and the old timers matchup is definitely the headline of the weekend. You know, Breeze, Brady, Watson, Mahomes is really special. It's kind of like, you know, hey, we're shuffling in the new era, and the old era is playing at the end of Sunday at like 4:25. But still very intriguing, and should have very good football teams to help out those quarterbacks too.
And one other thing to keep an eye on with the Mahomes and Watson, I have that one written down too, but remember that playoff game last year that started out so well for Houston? They went through a stretch, which unfortunately for them was the majority of the game, quarters 2, 3, and 4. They couldn't stop them, and they couldn't move the ball. So, yeah, I'm excited to see those quarterbacks. I would watch those two play anytime, anywhere. But I want to see if Houston is improved at all, because Kansas City is going to be more of the same, and they got completely blown out, they being the Texans, for the majority of that game. It wasn't even close.
completely blown out. I think Bill O'Brien had some iffy coaching decisions there early in the game when they still were in control of the flow of the game, like you're talking about. And, you know, Paul, to off your point, you know, I'm with you. One, I mean, we know how crazy that environment's going to be. And, like, you know, hey, Deshaun Watson is as cool and as calm as they come. But you're right. They were run off the field to where when they're going to watch film back throughout training camp and leading up to the game, and just they're going to be embarrassed by their performance. And let's not forget, you know, they won there in Kansas City early in the year during the regular season,
right,
too. So, you know, there's a lot of things to check out. But, you know, the one thing I'll say, too, Paul, I just feel like with Kansas City, and maybe I'm wrong, but I just think the pressure's off. And I think in this case with Kansas City, the pressure being off is a good thing. I think it's just going to let them be – Andy Reid's creative juices are going to flow, and Mahomes no longer has to worry about legacy and can I win the big game. It's all there. It's all set up for them to be a dynasty and Mahomes to take over the NFL and be the greatest quarterback in the game. And I really think they're the type of team that's going to feed off of that momentum of what they did last year. And it'll feed right into the 2020 season.
And adding on to that, you know who the pressure is really off there in that scenario, Chris, is Andy Reid. I mean,
definitely.
The pressure on Mahomes happened in a hurry because he was so good right away, and that team was so good right away. That's pressure from the last two or three years. I mean, Andy Reid, multiple NFC Championship games, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, the Super Bowl loss. So the guy who's calling the plays is feeling
even right.
more relief than Mahomes.
No doubt. I mean, you're right. Mahomes is only 2 years. Andy Reid's like, 2 years? How about 2 decades? How do you even deal
exactly.
with that? You know,
right?
So I think it's a very real point. And I do. I think it's going to embolden Andy Reid. He's no longer going to be worried about everybody micromanaging how he handles certain game situations. He'll have the old proverbial kickback of, hey, screw you. I've won the Super Bowl and I'll do what I want. And I know what I'm doing. And now more of us will be like, hey, he does know what he's doing. He did win the Super Bowl. That's right. So I think there's a lot to that. And I do. I think more years than not, I look at, unless you're named New England Patriots, I always go, oh, you know, I don't know if this team will bounce back after a Super Bowl win and just, you know, take off again. You know, because you fall into the trap of like, oh, we're good. We're great. The offseason's different. Everything like that. I don't know why, but I just look with Kansas City and just think they're going to feed off this, and this is going to give them the jump start they need.
I mean, did they lose any major players? I mean, any significant big-time contributors gone?
No, they really didn't. I mean, when you think about them as, you know, they lost Kendall Fuller, right, to the Washington Redskins in the secondary, but it's not like a major blow to their football team. They've really done a good job of really kind of keeping things intact. And, yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of a team that – or a major player that they lost. I can't think of one right now. Yeah.
It's a big reason why they were able to go running back. It's kind of a luxury pick, as you predicted there, with the last pick of the first round. One more storyline here, one more way to kind of attack the schedule and how good it looks right away. Let's move a little bit beyond week one, but let's stay in the first month of the season. Some storylines that you can't wait to see – play out beyond just one game, kind of the first three or four games that you want to see. Okay, let's turn the page to October, and we're going to see at this point if this is still really happening.
Right. Well, I know you and I had this conversation over text last night and things like this, but to me, you know, I am so not a believer in the let's evaluate the whole schedule and strength
you
of schedule. No, of course you can't. And you don't know what a team's going to be by the middle of November or the end of December if they've been ravaged by injuries. So you might think it's a tough schedule, but then get halfway through the season and go, damn, our second half of the season, three starting quarterbacks are out. This team is, you know, 2-10. And all of a sudden you look at it and go, damn, we got a cakewalk here at the end of the season. So I am big into when the schedule comes out. I'm just looking at those first four or five games because – to me, everybody's still alive at that point. Everybody still believes they got a chance and, oh, we can make a run. And really, that's the most important part of the schedule, Paul. As you know, even in, you know, NFL, college football, whatever it is, those early season losses come, man, those are some of the most pressurized times I ever had in an NFL locker room. When you start out 0-2 or 1-3, I mean – it's more pressure in those weeks than you're getting ready for a playoff game in January. It really is, because coaches get uptight. They start hearing their names on the hot seat, and you know, they start to just, you can feel the tension within the building. And I do. I look at that first part of the schedule as being a big thing. And I think here, the first thing that jumps out to me, first off, do you agree with what I said there? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to ask you a question. I mean, as you were talking about that, I'm thinking, yeah, that's a really good point. Can you think of a time when you were starting there in the NFL where you were 0-2, 1-3, and you remember what that week felt like?
Yeah, I should pull back my schedule here and just look it up. But like, I'll go back to the 2004 season. That was my second year in the NFL, right? It was 2 years after the Buccaneers had won the Super Bowl. You know, so 2003, which was my rookie year, the year after they won the Super Bowl, we had 7-9. We were competitive early on, but kind of fell off the wagon. So now it's like, okay, we got to regroup the troops here and get going. And we started off 0-2, and then had to go out to see the Oakland Raiders and Chucky's return to Oakland for the first time, and Rich Gannon and company, and all that. And that added like extra pressure to the situation, because Gruden not only, we got killed, we got stomped. You know, I thought I was going to be the starting quarterback in that game because, you know, me and Brad was the starter. I had a really good training camp. I was kind of nipping at his heels, and I think some people thought I might start the season. But we went out to Oakland, and they really dominated us. And then we came back home and lost again to the Denver Broncos. And then the week after that, I became the starter versus the New Orleans Saints. But I had never seen pressure like that in a building the way it was those first few weeks. And then when you start to not win a football game and you're going, oh, my gosh, we're 0-4. I mean, it's the world is ending, and it's hard to be a leader, climb out of that funk there, and then you still let them go 0-4, and you start to go, damn, our season's over. I mean, we're going to have to go on some hell of a run here to have a chance to even be relevant or in the conversation, and that didn't happen. So it's a very important part of the schedule.
With that in mind, is there one team or one theme that you're really keeping an eye on in September?
All right, so here, like the first one is, all right, just right off the bat, that what killed me is, you know, the trifecta is what I called it. Because I don't know if I've heard anybody say this, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but the fact that Mahomes, Watson, Lamar Jackson all play each other in the first 3 weeks of the season in a round robin, I mean, that has me excited just as a fan to go, damn. Okay, first 3 weeks of the year, I can guarantee you we're going to have one game that's going to have unbelievable quarterback matchup, and we're going to see plays by, you know, Watson, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson that you just don't see other quarterbacks making football, let alone I think this battle is personal between these three. I think they all want to be the greatest of their draft class, the greatest young quarterback. Watson doesn't have the Super Bowl and MVP trophy. I'm sure he knows that. He wants his turn now. So I'm very excited about that right off the bat. I think that's the first theme that jumped out to me. The next one would be just like, holy cow, holy tough schedule. I mean, just three teams I got for a year. The Texans, their first four games, they're insane. I mean, truly insane what they have on the dock this year. And I'm just pulling up their schedule so I can read it off here. But the Texans to go, Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers, Vikings, right off the bat. I mean, basically four playoff teams. I know the Steelers didn't make it, but Big Ben's back and they got to go to Pittsburgh. That's an unreal start to a season. And, you know, I mean, if they get out of that 2-2, that's a victory. I mean, that's a victory. That's all I can say. Then you go to the Vikings. I don't know if anybody's got a worse schedule than the Minnesota Vikings. It's not the first four games, Paul. It's the first six games of the Minnesota Vikings. Packers at the Colts with Phillip Rivers. Oh, AFC championship game contender, the Tennessee Titans. And at the Texans, at the Seahawks. The Falcons, who are looking back, are looking at a bounce back, like make or break year for Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. And then, at the Patriots, at the Packers in week eight after the bye week. I just look at that schedule and go, I don't know if I saw a team with a tougher first seven games than the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, there's a good chance they could be out of the playoff conversation come week eight. I mean, they really can with that schedule. And then last but not least, sorry, is the Jets. You know, I don't know what the hell the Jets did for the second year in a row to piss off the NFL, but that schedule to me is another one. You know, I thought there was a theme here with someone like some of the teams that didn't make the playoffs where I looked at the schedule and I went, oh, the NFL seemed nice to some of these non-playoff teams and tried to get them off to a good start. Not the Jets. Man, at the 49ers, at the Bills, and then you got the 49ers coming to town, and then at the Colts. You know, the Broncos are a scary team. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. You know, so I just – not that that all five games are tough there, but those first three are very tough. For a New York Jets yes. team that's trying to build confidence in a culture, there's a good chance they start out 0-3.
Yeah. I mean, looking at that schedule, yeah, for sure. And that plays into to one of the things I'm looking at too as well, Chris. AFC East quarterbacks. I've got this written down as the number two thing that I can't wait to see in September. You mentioned Darnold, but this division is now without Tom Brady for the first time in 20 years. And the first time without him with at least one Super Bowl title under his belt for the first time in 18 or 19 years. Darnold, Allen, Tua. We both believe he's going to be the starting quarterback at some point sooner rather than later. And probably right. Jarrett Stidham. No Tom Brady and those four quarterbacks. And you've got different kind of first-rounders. You've got a rookie in Tua. You've got a second-year player. You've got a third-year player. And then Stidham, I mean, who knows what he's going to be? I think that division with what's gone in Brady and what's coming up in the young talent is going to be a really fun one to watch with the young QBs.
I agree. You know, one, I think it's a little more talented than people want to give it credit for. I mean, the Jets and Dolphins are on the rise, but hey, the Bills are real. And again, I know the Patriots' schedule is tough and it's Jarrett Stidham, but again, I expect them to be real too. I mean, this is the division that had two players. I think they'll be right into week 16, week 17. If you can win those two games, New England, you're going to go to the playoffs. I really do. I just think there's enough there. I think they made enough adjustments on the offensive side of the ball. And again, I think they're going to play through their defense just like they did last year. They're going to be very comfortable going, oh, we'll play to win 17-13. No problem. You know, it's going to be old school Patriots football. But I'm with you. I think with the young quarterbacks and really Josh Allen being the proven one of the group at this point makes that division very intriguing.
Here's another one I'm looking at, AFC West, and looking at the record last year, obviously they have the returning Super Bowl champion in the Chiefs, but looking down at the rest of the teams, there was no other team at 500 or above in that division. So that gap right there is giant, and I'd like to see it close just as a fan. It'd be fun to watch Patrick Mahomes play the Broncos or the Chargers or the Raiders with a meaningful game after Thanksgiving. So I'd like to see that. And is there a division that put together their team in the offseason more to chase the one that's leading than the teams in the AFC West? Whether it's the Chargers taking their next quarterback. I mean, the Broncos, we both love what they did, adding weapons in that passing game. And you have the Raiders as well with another slew of very good draft picks coming up. And Carr, maybe in a make or break year. I hate that term for a quarterback, but this could be his last chance with that sense of urgency to chase Kansas City. So every division's fun, but that one, considering what it was last year and how the teams are built now to chase this year, is going to be fun too.
I'm with you there too. You know, I think those three teams close the gap on the Kansas City Chiefs, and I think those are three teams. I know we've talked about it in some prior podcasts that we look at and we go, they improved their football teams. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the Broncos, I think, have a lot of potential. I mean, they really do. With that defense and weapons, like you said, the Chargers defense, we know it's good. They've improved their O-line. They're going to play a different style. And, yeah, you mentioned it. The Raiders, you know, good draft, good free agency, got Derek Carr some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. I said, hey, and let's not forget, it's a big year for John Gruden. It's the first year in Las Vegas. You know, Gruden, he's had two below 500 years or 500 year seasons as his restart here in Oakland. So he's going to want to, you know, shut up some of the critics out there of him as well. So I'm with you. Kansas City's still the king, but that division did a lot to close the gap. And that division has three teams where it's like, put a mark next to them. They have a potential to be a player come December. I'm with you there. Hey, and while you're out on the West, here's another one that jumped out to me that I just wasn't as big as some of the other ones. But, you know, I look at the Los Angeles Rams, right? They're a team, hey, just missed out on the playoffs last year. They're one of those teams I think we all looked at. If they got in, ooh, they could be scary. You know, the one thing I look at with them, and who's ever in the control room pulling up these schedules, way to go. Johnny on the spot. Kristen on the spot, I believe.
A-plus, yeah.
But, Paul, look at this schedule they have with three East Coast trips in the first 5 weeks of the season. I mean, to me, and now again, I know, like, I'm not worried necessarily about the teams, but I'm more looking, and that Giants game's at home. That should say versus the Giants, not at the Giants, okay. But that's okay. But when you go Cowboys at home, awesome, but then it's at the Eagles, at the Bills, Giants at home, and then, man, we got to get back on a flight and go to the East Coast. So three out of the first five games on the East Coast, four out of the first eight are on the East Coast, let alone some tough matchups sprinkled in between there. That's daunting. You know, we saw the Raiders have to schedule or go all around the country last year, and it took the toll on them. And I know John Gruden complained about it and was bothered by it. This is going to be tough on this Los Angeles Rams football team that I have a lot of respect for and battle-tested. But when you travel like that, as you know, it's a game changer. Because usually on East Coast trips or a West Coast team, you're leaving on a Friday. You know, you play a Sunday afternoon game. You don't get home till really late, you know, Monday morning, basically, or early Monday morning, late Sunday night. And it can wear your football team out. And that'll be a tough obstacle for them to overcome.
I would imagine with that Philadelphia to Buffalo trip, I mean, that turnaround, they'll probably stay somewhere on the East Coast.
I would think so.
And find a place to practice. Hey, as long as we're talking about the Rams, I had this one written down as well, but I didn't think we'd get to it. I can't wait to see the 49ers and how they look in September, not only because it's a fun offense to watch, and we like talking about that each week, but if you go back to about the last 10 NFC Super Bowl teams, whether they won or lost, outside of Seattle, none of them have come back the next year or two as strong. They've all taken either a little step back or a major step back and kind of stayed there. I mean, Carolina got bad for a little while. The other team stayed competitive, but they weren't what they were in the January and February of the season before. And San Francisco had such an interesting offseason because you could see them maintaining their identity, losing to Forrest Buckner, but grabbing a great player plausibly at that position in the draft early, putting him in right there, getting a weapon in the first round for Jimmy Garoppolo to maybe be a little better than what we saw in the Super Bowl. So I think San Francisco, whether you go macro in NFC struggles after a Super Bowl or micro and what that team is doing to get a little bit better, close eye on the Niners and what they're doing too.
I like that call though. I mean, it was another one that I wrote down. It didn't make like my main headlines, but I'm with you. First off, Super Bowl hangover is real to your point. Mm-hmm. You know, again, as long as you're not named the New England Patriots, it's real for the other 31 teams in the sport. And yeah, and you know, people say why? Well, why? Because hey, it's a short off season. You're feeling great. You're feeling confidence. Little details get swiped by the side. Oh, we were in the Super Bowl. You know, you feel sorry for yourself because you got to the Super Bowl, but you didn't win the game. You know, you take a little extra time in the offseason because your season went so long. There's just so many things. And of course, complacency. And then you not realizing, oh, we didn't win the Super Bowl. We shouldn't have a bullseye on our back. But no, you're going to have a bullseye on your back for most teams that play early in the season because they're going to go, this team went to the Super Bowl. Let's measure ourselves against them. Oh, we beat them? Maybe we're a Super Bowl team this year. But within that, I'm with you. And then you're right with the Jimmy Garoppolo thing. And how's he going to handle the pressure? Because that's all going to come back into the conversation again. Oh, can he win the big game? Oh, you know, I don't know. I guess none of the 13 wins they had last year were big games. It was only the losses were, which I hate that crap. But I'll say this too off of your point, Paul. For a Super Bowl team, man, do they have a favorable early season schedule. You know, when you really look at it, you look at really other than the Eagles in week four, you can sit here, and I know it's not going to be easy going, you know, to New York and having to play the double whammy. They'll probably play on the East Coast 2 weeks in a row, just like you were talking about, just like we were talking about with the Rams. But they're better than all those teams they have on their schedule. Now, I know they got to play the games, and, hey, there's a lot that goes into it, but I can sit here just unequivocally right now and go, no, the 49ers are better than the Cardinals, the Jets, the Giants, and the Dolphins, four of their first five opponents. And I don't have any doubt about that. Zero doubt about that. And I think that favors them at least to maybe get a chance to get over that Super Bowl hangover and get a few wins against teams that are not in their class and then start to, you know, kind of button it all together, get their feet underneath them and start rolling again. So I think it was a very favorable schedule for a team that lost the Super Bowl.
And I think it's a very real thing, just like you talked about maybe 10 minutes ago with the schedule for quarterbacks who start out 0-2 or 1-3 and that pressure they feel. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have a sense of that or kind of a version of that all season because, I mean, if they go 9-7 and lose in the first round of the playoffs, that's a bad season. It's the first time
no doubt.
He's been around that in New England. It's the first time where that's directly on him. If you're not playing in late January, your season was a failure and you're the quarterback of that team.
Oh, I mean, it's never going to end around Jimmy Garoppolo. All we're going to hear is about the end of the Super Bowl. He should have hit the deep post. You know, shouldn't have let Chris Jones bat the pass down. Can he win the big moments? Can he carry his team in big moments? Oh, you know, the 49ers lost. They should have signed Tom Brady and just got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo. He's going to have to answer all those questions all year long. And that's unfortunate.
Right.
But I'll just say this to Jimmy. You are a starting quarterback in football, and you're making $27.5 million a year. So tell everyone to screw off and go play your best ball. And I'm hoping that for him.
Hey, as long as we're talking about quarterbacks making north of $25 million, the other real story outside of the schedule right now is the Dak Prescott contract situation with the Cowboys. It's going to drag on for a while. I've been listening to you and Mike talk about it on PFT. Sounds like it probably won't get figured out until the middle of July. But there are so many ways to talk about this. And because it is a news story that remains close to the top of the headlines and has been hanging around, I thought it would be fun to kind of revisit your ranking of him. And I could throw out where I have him ranked as well, starting quarterbacks 1 through 32. I don't know where you have him ranked. You don't know where I'm going to put him. And just kind of deal with it that way. I know you want him to sign. You'd like to see him there. You think the Cowboys should. It's eventually going to happen. But in the lead up to that, where do you have him ranked, 1 through 32 right now?
Yeah, well, to me, you know, and again, we're going to do the Sims Top 40 coming up here in the next few weeks. So I'm kind of like tentatively starting to get my list and finalize it here. You know, Dak Prescott is not a top five quarterback to me, but he's somewhere between six and 10. And, you know, I could probably narrow it down and say he's not even in the 10. I could probably say 6 through 9. I mean, and again, I don't have an exact spot yet because I want to take my time and I'm going to unveil my list. But I have no doubt that he's in that category. Like, Paul, you know the names of my top five quarterbacks in football. Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson. To me, those are the top five in the game. Then you get down to that next group, and that's where it becomes, you know, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. And I think that's the class of, you know, maybe Kirk Cousins in that conversation too. I think that's the next group of guys that he's in the conversation with. So what do you think? Where you got him at?
I have him at 9. I have 9 written down. And it's amazing, Chris. I think I've been hanging around you too long and listening to what you say because it rubs off on my own feelings as well. Because what I have written down here after the 9 that's circled, I say 1 through 5 is easy. No matter what your order is, those five quarterbacks you mentioned, they're the clear-cut 1 through 5. You can spend 30 seconds and get that done. The 6 through 10, you could spend a week on. And I literally made 5 different lists, and I have so many things crossed out. And I said with Dak, after the 9, anywhere from 6 through 11 is where he has to live, somewhere in there.
And I think that's fair.
Whether it's Carson Wentz, whether it's Matt Ryan, whether it's Kirk Cousins, and amazingly, he's getting lumped in with Kirk Cousins now with the franchise talk and all that. His biggest comp, and I did way too much of a deep dive on this last night after the kids went to bed. His biggest comp in the last 2 years with team wins and however you want to grade a quarterback, whether it's a percentage of completion, touchdown to interception, it is almost exactly the same as Kirk Cousins the last 2 years. So those two have to be together. I had Dak just one spot ahead of him. After the top 5, he's somewhere in the top 10, maybe 11. I don't know how you have him outside of the top 11 or top 12.
No, agreed. Like, that to me is the point. You know, hey, whether you think he's 6 or 9, That's right. That's a good conversation, and we can argue about it. That's cool.
Right.
If you're coming in here and start to tell me he's number 16 in football, then we're going to have a real argument. I'm going to tell you you're wrong. You know, if you tell me he's top five, I'm going to go, no, you're wrong. Let's have a conversation about this. But, yeah, I think that's being fair, that somewhere in that range. And, yeah, some people are going to see it a little differently than others. Now, I know also people are like, mind-blown emoji. Oh, my gosh, Dak Prescott's going to be the highest-paid quarterback and highest-paid player in the history of the sport. And
for a while.
I want to say, yeah, for a while, until the next guy's up, the next quarterback, until Mahomes signs or somebody else. You know, so what I want to say is this. You know, don't be shocked, people. This is the way the NFL works. It's just the way it is. This is inventory on the shelf. And the next guy up that's even close to the top of your position conversation always ones up one guy or the next guy or gets the next biggest contract. Now, you know, and let's not forget, Derek Carr was the highest paid player in the history of the sport at one time.
Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. So this is what happens. Now, what I don't get and what I don't understand is I don't know why the NFL owners let it happen. That's where I would push back. And you know me, I'm all for the players getting money. I am. But I think the quarterbacks get too much of it right now. I do. You know, I
what
don't
should
think
the
quarterbacks
do?
Well, I think all of them have fallen into this trap of we need a quarterback. We need a quarterback. We need a quarterback. Okay. You know, I understand you need a quarterback, right? But like, you know, I just think the market has exploded to ridiculousness. That's where I want to say. I want to say this. I want to go, no, Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson make this. None of you other guys are as good as them, and you shouldn't make that money until we even think you're in the conversation with being as good as them. I would like to see the money go to other players who are making $2 million a year, and now they can make $4 million a year. You know, these quarterbacks are being paid like they're 20 times greater than some of the guys on the roster, and I'm going to go, they're not. You know, so that's what bothers me. Hey, even with Brady and Breeze, I'll throw that out of this conversation, Paul. Why did those teams have to give them, or Phillip Rivers, give them $25 million? They were going to play football. They wanted to play. That's at the end of the career. Give them 15. I bet you they still would have played, you know. But we're into this like, oh, we got to give them the money. So I do think that the NFL owners need to get together and figure something out here with this.
So as I'm listening to you, I also thought of this in the last, and I don't know if it was 7 years ago or 9 years ago or 10 years ago, Chris, but you remember very well when the first overall pick used to get, I think Sam Bradford got like north of $40 million and Matthew Stafford got around $50 million and people were similar kind of conversation. They're like, hold on a second. This is ridiculous. Everybody was saying for years, this is just the way it is. It's good for business. At some point, the owners put an end to it. Or somebody put an end to it. So it's happened once recently with a major $1 million problem, one player getting way too much. What can owners do? What's a solution that they can come up with as we pat the league on the back for ending rookies getting way too much before they played? What can they do about this quarterback issue?
Well, I think the big thing is, first off, that's going to affect this quarterback issue a little bit and them being overpaid is, you know, here we are for about the fourth or fifth year in a row where we see three or four quarterbacks drafted in the first round or coming to the league every year where we go, damn, they're good. Like, these are franchise-type quarterbacks. So I do think those type of players, for lack of a better phrase, are growing on trees a little bit more than maybe they were 20, 25 years ago. I think the popularity of the sport and just the focus on the quarterback position and it being the number one sport in our country for so long, so many of our great athletes in this country have decided, I want to be the quarterback. I mean, that's when I watch a game on TV with my mom and dad, all they do is show the quarterback. All they do is show his face and what he does. And when something good happens, they say the quarterback did it. Nobody else on the team did it. So I think with the influx of talent, that owners should be able to start driving a little bit more of a hard bargain when it comes to this stuff. And just across the board, I would like to see them draw a line with the best players in the sport a little bit more. Like, Dexter Lawrence is a really good player. DeMarcus Lawrence, excuse me. He should never be paid like Khalil Mack. I'm sorry. He's not Khalil Mack. Just because he was the next guy up doesn't mean – and that's where I would like the owners to change it a little bit. You know, just not always have the next guy up be – oh, he gets more because he's next. No. At some point, you got to say the guys that are getting paid the most are getting paid the most because they're the best at their job.
And, so take that logic, Chris.
Yeah.
Take that argument, which is a good one, and apply it to what the Jones family should do with Dak Prescott.
Well, I think the Jones family is being nice to Dak Prescott in a lot of ways. I do. So here's what I know about the situation. I have been told by people that I know are in the know. I mean, Dak Prescott's been offered 5 years, $175 million. He's been offered already to be the highest paid player in the history of the sport. Now, what I've heard the argument is about year five, whether Dak Prescott and his agent don't want a year five, they want it to be a 4-year contract. And then if there is a fifth year to the contract, what I've been told is Dak Prescott and his camp want a number that saves them as far as keeps it respectable in the quarterback market 5 years from now. And I've heard they're asking for something around $45, $46 million a year on that last year of the deal. Right. Where I want to say to Dak Prescott, hey, I love you, man, and I got a lot of respect, and I think you're a baller and tough, and you could be the quarterback of my team any day. I really do mean that. But I also want to say, man, whether you have 185 in the bank or 175 in the bank, it's not going to affect your life, okay, when you start to get to that number. Also, I think it'll go a long way in the locker room, and if anything, with like we've seen in New England and Tom Brady, hey, I heard Stephen Jones say this the other day. There's a lot of analytics out there that tell you if the quarterback's taking up too much of the salary cap percentage, that it's hard to build the team around him. And that's real. And listen, Tom Brady wasn't in New England going, I'll take less, I'll take less. Hey, don't worry. No, they basically gave him ultimatums throughout his career and basically said, no, here's what you got, all right? We're going to try to build a team around you. And a lot of the times he just accepted it because he was a team player and he was good. He could have probably stomped his feet, got Mr. Kraft involved. But I think there was a lot of years where they just knew and said, no, this is the offer. We want you to be our quarterback. But if you take more than this or want more than this, it's going to ruin the team. And I just hope Dak Prescott could see the big picture in this. And he can make up that $10 million in commercials over the next few years.
Especially playing for the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
And maybe somebody in his camp should be giving him counsel. And I'm just connecting the dots here with what you were talking about, hey, at some point, these contracts for quarterbacks who are not the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks, they're going to have to stop. Maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, when he gets to that fifth year, maybe the governor has been put on this a little bit. Maybe it doesn't look as good as it does right now.
Right. I mean, listen, I think there's a good chance it could go that way. You know, I do, you know, and again, you know, we're going to have, what's his name? The Clemson quarterback coming in the draft Trevor Lawrence, excuse me. And Justin Fields from Ohio State. And I'm sure there's two or three others out there that I don't know about right now to where we're going to go, damn, there's five new starting quarterbacks coming into football once again. So a little bit like the running back position, when is the NFL, the owners, the GMs going to start, you know, drawn a little bit more of a concrete line and negotiations instead of always breaking down barriers for the next guy. Hey, listen, to me, nobody should be paid more than Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers until Mahomes or Deshaun Watson do their deal. And then if they want to make more, I get that. And that, or Lamar Jackson, I understand that. But I just don't agree with this. And I'm shocked that the owners have let it go this way, where the next guy up always gets more. To me, that doesn't make sense. And I think at some point that will slow down. I don't know. You agree with everything I'm saying? If you don't, tell me to shut the hell up.
No, I'm sitting here nodding my head agreeing with most of what you're saying. The main point is that, like you, I'm all for the players getting every last dollar they can, because this game goes away in a hurry and they're going to be middle-aged men and you want to have as much money as possible. And I want them to get that. However, like the point I made about when the rookies, the first round picks, used to get $48, $49 million. At some point, the pretty good players or the really good players getting $30, $35 million and getting up into the $40 million, it's going to stop. I would think it's going to have to. So go ahead and take, I don't know the details of Dak's offer, but go ahead and take what's on the table right now, whether it's $130, $160, or $140 million, because I think there are a number of people thinking like you, and that whether it's 2022 or 2024, there's going to come a year when these dollars are going to get reined back in a little bit for the good, but not awesome quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, I just would like to see the wealth spread. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. That to me is more important to me than anything else. It's not, you know, of course, right. I don't want the owners to have the money. Screw the owners. They got $1 billion.
Yeah, give it to the players, sure.
And so, right, the players need it. But my point is like, you know, to what I said earlier, you know, like Jared Goff is not worth, you know, four Robert Woods. I'm sorry. I mean, he's just not. Yeah. That to me is stupid. And that's where I think it's gone wrong. And we're overvaluing the position or, oh, the guy that's the face of our franchise and all that. They're just, you know, again, they're just, that's a lot of crap. Build a team, okay?
Yep.
And your quarterback will look like a top 10 quarterback. And the Rams would be the perfect example of that. I don't think Jared Goff's anywhere near a top 10 quarterback. But he's getting paid like he's a top five. Why? Because that team has been phenomenal. And then they went to the Super Bowl. But the public perception and the media, oh, Jared Goff's the face of the franchise. He's a Super Bowl quarterback. And I want to go, hey, listen, I like Jared Goff, but there's like 14 other quarterbacks that we could have put on the Rams, and they still would have gone to the Super Bowl. You know, mm-hmm. I don't mean to disrespect that way, even though I know I'm disrespecting that way. But, you know, that's my point there.
You complimented Kristen in the back doing a great job with the full screens, getting them up on time. And she actually changed that at to a versus while we were talking about
it.
Part of the schedule too. So that was top level by her. But you're also producing here today because we're talking about Dak. You bring up Jared Goff. 2016 draft. It was so much fun redoing the top 10 of the 2017 draft last week. We're going to do the same thing with the 2016 draft, where in real life, it was Jared Goff going first to the LA Rams. So we take a peek there. And first of all, Chris, unlike the 2017 draft, okay, 9 and 10, that didn't work out. There's some great talent and some really good picks at the top of the 16 draft, unlike the 17.
There really is. I don't know about you, but I had a harder time with this draft. You know,
yes.
I did, because I think there was more talent in the top 10, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot more guys, you know, even later in the round, second round, things like that, where you look at them right now and go, man, they weren't a top 10 pick for the way their careers have turned out and the way they played. So I ended up having a long list and going, damn, I'm going to have to cross out a lot of guys to put in this new top 10. So I had a much tougher time with this one than the other one. And I don't know. I don't know about you, but I might have a few surprises in this one too.
Okay. Those are always fun, but I'm with you in that I had a really hard time with it too, for a good reason, because there's so much talent in the top 10. And also you get to the rounds 2 through 5, there's some big time players as well. So let's do it this way. I will say the team, I'll say who they picked in real life. You can give your new pick. I'll give mine, and we'll just kind of go back and forth and bounce them off each other that way. LA Rams at 1. Rams at 1 went Jared Goff. I have a feeling neither one of us are going to do that this time. So who are you giving the Rams with the first pick?
I'm going to give them Carson Wentz, the quarterback they should have taken. Okay? I mean, you know, again, I'm a big Carson Wentz fan. And Carson Wentz, to me, at the time, was warranted of the number one pick, I thought. But, you know, hey, Carson Wentz, say what you want. I know there's injuries here and there. Man, when he's healthy and he's got a little help around him, you could see he could be special. I mean, he could have easily been the NFL MVP in 2017. You know, and then really, if anybody doubted Carson Wentz, all you need to do is watch the last half of the season last year. I mean, he had nobody around him. It was Carson Wentz just carrying the squad, and he got them to the playoffs. And that's, to me, what a special top two or top three type of pick can do, and that's why I put Wentz there.
I had the exact same thing. I went Carson Wentz, one to the Rams as well. I'll just throw in, I mean, he has this added thing of the combination of talent and toughness. I mean, there's a real grit with his version of athleticism. If you respect the position at all, it's really fun to watch. And I don't know if that matters when you're talking about a number one overall pick, but it's easy to be a fan of the way he plays. And so I have him at number one as well.
Yeah, it is. And then, like you said too, he's got that ability to carry him. And then he's got this unbelievable self-belief a little bit, to where I just don't feel like he's ever flustered, or I feel like, oh, if I got the ball and we get a chance to win, we're going to make it happen. He's kind of got that, you know, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson determination about him, to where it might not always look pretty or surgical, but somehow he gets it done on a weekly basis.
Exactly. So Wentz number one, I think I'm going to guess that's the last one we agree on. I think that's the last one where it's going to be. We
I
have
wouldn't
the
be
same.
Shocked. I know.
Okay. So Eagles at number two. They took Carson Wentz back in 2016. Not available now in our draft. So who's it going to be?
I'm going to go with Dak Prescott. I am. You know, hey, I think Wentz is, you know, right on the outside of the top five quarterbacks. I don't think Dak Prescott is far from that. And Dak Prescott, hey, you know, you can look at the results on the field, stats, all of that. I don't even care about all that. What I do see is a guy that's very good in the pocket, can push the ball down the field, people around him, he's not affected by it, great leader, tough, humble, you know, really good arm, can run not only as a drop-back quarterback, but you can design some quarterback runs for him where he's a moose to tackle. So, you know, when you're talking about a quarterback that I think's in the top 10 and we got to go back and redraft, I'm going to put him towards the top of the draft because it's a special position and I think he's a damn good player.
I'm going to have Dak pretty soon here as well. So I can't argue with that one too much. And at number two for the Eagles, I crossed this one out at first, but then I came back and said, you know what? I'm going to give him this player. I went Tyreek Hill, number two to the Eagles. And he was,
I'm not mad
was he
at you.
A fourth? Okay, I knew you wouldn't be. He was a fourth or a fifth round pick, Chris. I mean, he was somewhere down the road there. And
right.
Outside of the quarterback position, outside of the top five quarterbacks, is there a player in the NFL that makes the defensive coordinator on Monday or Sunday night after the previous game think longer and harder and worry more? I think he's the biggest weapon outside of the QB in the league. And I can justify him being at number two because the difference he makes for that offense and because how much stress he puts on the other defense.
I think you explained it perfectly. That's right. You know, screw wide receiver position or whatever. It's weapon and a
yes.
weapon that is a game changer. And like you said, not only for his own offense and what they can do and what he does for everybody else, but the main point is he is a talent that makes defenses have to do things that they don't want to do or they've never done before because he is that special. And yeah, like he is the perfect example of like stats just don't tell the whole story about Tyreek Hill.
Right.
I know he's 1,200-1,300 a year or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's the pressure he puts on defenses, let alone he has a skill set that really only their quarterback and a few other quarterbacks can totally take advantage of because you better have a big freaking arm to throw to that guy when he doesn't have two rockets up his butt. He's got three. He's in the rarefied three rockets up his butt air right there. So
remember,
I'm not mad at you. I like that.
Thank you. I have not elicited any anger out of my partner yet through two picks. And remember that throw in the Super Bowl we spent so much time with about 4 or 5 days after Patrick Mahomes throwing it like 60 yards downfield on basically a
right.
post flag? Awesome throw, but that was an amazing catch to come back and bring that one in. So the speed and acceleration, the versatility, yes, but underrated hands and ball judgment as
yes.
well with those balls that are thrown way downfield.
No doubt. He plays bigger than 5'10 or 5'9,
right.
whatever he is. I mean, he can really jump. He's physical. And like you said, he's very good at going up and playing the ball. And that play is the perfect example. Three jet wasp or two jet wasp, whatever it was. You know, again, there's not many offenses or teams that can pull that off. And to pull that off, you need a guy like Tyreek Hill. And there's nobody like that can run like that. There's a few guys that can come close, but that's what he does for your offense.
Chargers, in 3-4 years ago, they took Joey Bosa. Not a bad pick. What do you think now?
I actually ended up going Joey Bosa. You know?
Really?
You know, well, I did it a lot like I did my other one, where I didn't look at needs. I'm really almost picking what I'm looking at as my top. I'm going what I think is like my top 10 players from that draft. And, you know, Bosa... Yeah, I look at Bosa and go, he's a special football player. He's very good against the run, and we know he's special as far as rushing the passer and doing all those things too. So, again, I just think with the style of play, the fuck-up-the-play ability, the disruption and all of that, let alone the production and the value of the position itself, it led me back to Joey Bosa. Yeah, I think he's worthy of being in that spot. You sound surprised. You didn't like that one, huh?
It's not that I don't like the player and don't like the fit and all that. It says the offensive weapons available now in this draft at wide receiver and running back are unbelievable. It's incredible. And it's actually, I'm kind of proud of you for going nuts and bolts and going defensive lineman or defensive end, because I was not a big enough man to do that. I'm just in love with the running backs and wide receivers here. And I'm going to go back there. Chargers number three, I'm going with Zeke Elliott. And okay, they were in the running back game early. I mean, they took Melvin Gordon somewhere around in there. And he was a decent player, but obviously didn't work out the way they wanted. So this gives them a little more than what they got in Melvin Gordon when they took him number one. And Zeke Elliott, I'm just impressed with how consistently he's up in that range of touching the ball 25 to 30 times. The forward lean is always there. If he doesn't get you two, maybe he'll get you seven. Catches the ball very well. So I traditionally don't like a running back this high. I just love the way he has produced consistently at a really high level.
Hey, he's been a huge part, if not the number one part, to a team that's, you know, their motto was running the football and right, really playing behind his strengths and doing that. So I get that. You know, you're going to be surprised by my list. It's a lot of nuts and bolts in this one for your phrase. A lot
who
of nuts
you?
And bolts. I don't know who I am.
Dressed up as Chris Sims.
Some tell me I used to play quarterback, but damn, it just seems like in this pod, I don't like quarterbacks, it seems like, so far.
All right, Cowboys at four. They took Zeke Elliott, great pick, in 2016. What do you think about him for our little fantasy draft here?
Yeah, well, he's not coming up for me yet, all right? I'm going with Jalen Ramsey as number four there, at the number four pick. And again, like I said, I didn't look at team needs or anything like that. I kind of right, just making my top 10 from the 2016 draft. I think either way, they could have used a corner. But yeah, Jalen Ramsey, you know, from the get-go, has been one of the best corners in the NFL. So I just think about it with that, all the different receivers we see in football right now, you know, the different skill sets, sizes, everything like that. Jalen Ramsey can just match up with everybody. And, you know, he brings a swagger and an attitude to your defense. He allows your defense to do things that it normally wouldn't be able to do unless you had a Jalen Ramsey type player. And we saw that in Jacksonville. I didn't see any DB cover Tyreek Hill as well as Jalen Ramsey did both times he played him. All right. And, you know, even when he went to the Rams last year, it wasn't his best year. It's not the easiest change in teams, but they did things with him that they never did on defense until he got there. So he's always had a bullseye on him, the pressure on him to be the guy, to be on an island, go get the guy. And yeah, to me, he's one of the better defensive players in the NFL.
Now, I just said I traditionally don't like running backs as high as three. I went Zeke Elliott at number three. And I'm a little bit full of shit here because I'm going right back to running back at number four
might.
For the Cowboys.
You okay?
And so it's Derrick Henry here from me. And I'm so used to seeing the Cowboys and enjoy seeing them and knowing, hey, in that offense, they're going to have a running back who can get you 27, 28 carries any Sunday and do it again the next week. And that's what Derrick Henry was giving the Titans the last five, six, 7 weeks of last season. So going against my own belief there and going back-to-back running backs, but Derrick Henry is now a Cowboy in my world.
Look at you, you running back hoarder, you. Look at you over there. But you know, again, you're not going to get a big argument from me here. I mean, yeah, he is, you know, a little bit like we talked about Zeke. I mean, he's kind of the mantra of the Tennessee Titans, and they play, especially this year, and what they did at the end of the year behind him and his ability to, even when nothing was there, get 2 or 3 yards and keep them in a manageable position, let alone when he did break through the line, he could go 70 to the house. That's where he's special. So I'm not mad at you there. I am going to go – oh, sorry. We're going next team, right? I almost jumped the shark there. My bad. Go ahead. You said
that. I think I'm going to have to dock you your first round pick next year for going too early there at number
five. Sorry, sorry.
All right, Jaguars at five. They took Jalen Ramsey. He was terrific for them, but obviously they traded him to the Rams. So Jacksonville, what do you think?
I'm going with your Tyreek Hill right here. This is where I go, Tyreek Hill. You know, listen, you explained it. You know, Tyreek Hill, I don't care what his number of catches are or his yards are or whatever. I mean, they're going to be good. I know that, but they might not necessarily always lead the league, and that doesn't affect my decision either. I mean, he just, again, like you said, he's a mismatch. He's a game changer. He's a game plan changer, you know, and the fact that when he touches the ball, no matter where he touches it, whether it's a slant route, a bubble screen, or a reverse, that you could strike up the band possibly to score a touchdown, that there's no stat that can quantify that right there to me. And that's really just where he is so dangerous. And yeah, to me, he's one of the best offensive players in the NFL. And you put it right. He's just a weapon. He's one of the best weapons in the NFL.
Right. And it's a great time to be that kind of guy, even though he's special and unique, because the NFL seems very open. Teams copying each other to go with the jet sweep, the quick screens, and they weren't incorporating receivers as much in that sort of way 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
You gave Dak Prescott to the Eagles at number two. I'm going Jacksonville, Dak Prescott. And we spent a lot of time talking about him already. But the one extra point I'll add here, it's okay. It's a win. It's success to take a quarterback this high and have him be the eighth, ninth, or tenth best quarterback in the league. You're not always going to get the top three or four quarterback. I think the standard or the expectations of fans sometimes is so high when you take a quarterback this high in the draft, you don't always get an all-pro quarterback. But if you get one who's in that top tier, who's in the top 10, whether you rank him seventh or rank him ninth, it doesn't matter. He is that guy. He gives you a chance to have success in January. So I don't think he's a top five quarterback, but I would take him in the top five, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
No, that makes sense. I mean, because you're right. If you're saying a quarterback is going to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL career-wise for a number of years, that is warranted of a top 10 pick in the draft. No doubt about that. So I'm with you all the way there. You're right. And then every fan wants Mahomes and Watson and Lamar Jackson. And, you know, come on. If they were that commonplace, you know, then they wouldn't be that exciting. So we wouldn't love them as much, right? I mean, that's really all it comes down to. But, I'm with you. I love Dak, and that makes sense.
Baltimore at six in real life hit a home run with Ronnie Stanley on the offensive line. He was all pro this last year. Who would you like to see a Raven via the sixth pick?
I did think of Ronnie Stanley here.
I mean, did too.
He's warranted of being right where he got drafted. I mean, he's one of the best left tackles in the NFL, and we know that. But I went another Baltimore way. I ended up going Chris Jones right here from the Kansas City Chiefs. Chris Jones, who's, you know, really the last 2 years has really come on for this football team and been the best defensive player on the Chiefs. You know, really, you know, you could sit there and go in some games and some periods of the season where you go, he might, other than Patrick Mahomes, he might be the second best player on the team in general. I mean, he's special with what he does. And it doesn't always go on the stat sheet. But I look at Chris Jones right now, and other than Aaron Donald, I think Chris Jones has probably supplanted Fletcher Cox even as the second best interior defensive lineman in the game. You know, just from any aspect. He can do a lot of stuff, Paul. I mean, he could two gap, he could play nose tackle, he could play three technique, he could play defensive end. He's just really rare to be 6'5". I think he's 315 or so, somewhere in that range. And to be as athletic and as explosive as he is, just not a lot of guys in the NFL built like that.
Shout out to Mississippi State for that draft class. Chris Jones and Dak Prescott coming out of
there. Damn, right?
Seriously. Pretty damn good back in 2016. So
and
Ravens at
shout
six.
Shout out to Kansas City, too. Just to let them have a shout out, too. Yeah.
for finding him. Hey, Baltimore at six. I'm going Michael Thomas. What do you think of that?
He's coming up shortly for me. No doubt about it. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's my reasoning. And I'm not saying that he's first-team All-Pro and piling up those numbers because of Drew Brees and Sean Payton, but I think they're inflated because of the type of system Drew and Sean want to run and how surgical Drew Brees is with it. I would love to see him with Lamar Jackson and what that would help make Lamar Jackson become, and how ridiculous would his numbers be in Baltimore without Brees and without Payton. I don't know. I'd like to see it. And I'd like to see Lamar Jackson play with that kind of receiver. We already know he's fantastic and great to watch and all that. But if he had one of the top two or three receivers in the game, what would he be then? I just think it would be a fun passing game marriage to watch.
Well, it definitely would be. I mean, Michael Thomas obviously underdrafted, being drafted in the second round. And, you know, he would fit Baltimore in their attitude, right? I mean, he likes to get up and show his muscles, and yeah. he blocks, and he's physical, and he seems like he plays pissed off like the rest of the Ravens football team. So that would make sense. And, you know, listen, I think Michael Thomas is a really interesting conversation, and you kind of, like, sparked it right there, because I'm with you. Like, Michael Thomas is widely renowned right now as the best wide receiver in football.
You know, but his numbers say that.
His numbers say that. That's exactly the point. That's where I would, you know, and again, I think he's awesome. But do I think he's the most physically gifted receiver in football? No, I don't. You know, I think if, hey, listen, if we put some of the other physically gifted, ridiculous receivers in football in New Orleans with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, their numbers would be absolutely ridiculous as well. And I don't mean that to demean Michael Thomas or anything like that. But I think you're right. I mean, yeah, his greatness is a little inflated to me because of the Sean Payton, Drew Brees factor, and especially Sean Payton. Right. You know, it's not the same as DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham Jr. when those guys are healthy. Those guys, to me, you can just line up, or Tyreek Hill, you can just line up in one spot all game, and they're going to attract a lot of attention. I don't know if you could necessarily say that with Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas garners a lot of attention because people know Sean Payton's going to put him in a spot to get him the ball, and they get sick of that. Not because they're going, man, we got nobody that can play this guy man-to-man and ever cover him and ever stay with him. So that's the difference to me. And, you know, people think I'm a Michael Thomas hater all the time because I say these type of things. But, hey, listen, that's just my opinion, and I've been around a lot of good receivers, and that's just my thoughts on that topic.
Also, a couple other things to think about with that help him. I mean, whether he's good or whether he's awesome, he's somewhere in there. But his numbers are helped because, hey, everybody knows that there's a quarterback back there that gets rid of the ball. So they don't come after him quite as much as they would another quarterback in the league. And there's also a running back that can catch the ball very well out of the backfield. So let's keep it here. Let's say Michael Thomas was a Baltimore Raven for a couple of seasons. Do you think we'd be talking about a top five wide receiver, or is he more top 10, top 12, just a really good player?
Yeah, I think we'd be talking more of like top 10, top 12, or a lot of people would be like, man, you know who that is a really good player that doesn't get the credit they deserve just because they don't get enough catches and things? That Michael Thomas for the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I think he would be that type of guy. But in the world of, like you're saying right now, where fans just read the bottom line statistics and all we care about is, did he deliver for me in fantasy football this weekend? You know, from those two aspects, he delivers, right? So, therefore, Johnny or Joe, common fan, he just thinks, well, look, his fantasy points are the best. His stats are the best. He must be the best. And, no, that's not always true. That doesn't always – you know, Patrick Mahomes' stats were not the best at the quarterback position last year. But he was the best quarterback in football.
Right.
And you know, so that's the only point. He's a really awesome football player that I think, yes, is a little overrated because of the system and place that he's playing in.
Bringing us to the 49ers at 7, they took DeForest Buckner, really good player for them. He is now an Indianapolis Colt. They got the number 13 overall pick in this year's draft for him. So San Fran at 7, Chris.
And that's where I'm going, Ronnie Stanley here. You know, to me, Ronnie Stanley merits, you know, this type of pick. He's, you know, like we talked about it a minute ago, he's a franchise left tackle. You don't ever have to worry about him, nothing. He's awesome in the run game. He's one of the best pass blocking tackles in football. Also, within saying, he's one of the best run blocking tackles in football. You know, that's, you don't hear that all the time. You know, there's other offensive linemen out there who are, oh, man, they're exceptional at pass blocking. Run blocking, they're average. It's rare that you have the guys that have the full package. And to me, Ronnie Stanley, you know, he encompasses all of that, let alone, hey, we know they're going to run the football, and they demand physicality out of their offensive line in Baltimore and things like that. So, yeah, to me, this was a no-brainer. He was definitely going to be in my top 10.
It'd be interesting if that actually happened, if they would have gone Mike McGlinchey, also from Notre Dame, the next year and had bookend Irish tackles there. I went with Chris Jones here at number 7. And really, you're the one about a year ago who really tipped me off to him to watch him even more closely this past season and see how disruptive he is. And DeForest Buckner, I thought about keeping him there, but for some reason, they traded him away. And it doesn't mean he wasn't a really good player there, but they were willing to get rid of him. So maybe Chris Jones would be that next level, or would have given him something a little bit different on that defensive line, so where they would have wanted to kept him instead of give him away a few seasons later.
Yeah, well, you know, I get you there. And, you know, they got a lot of similarities as far as, you know, the way they play the game and all that. But I'm with you. I mean, hey, listen, I think Chris Jones is better than DeForest Buckner, definitely. And, you know, just to your thought, too, you know, I don't think the 49ers getting rid of him wasn't because they didn't like him or anything like that, too. Mm-hmm. I think they realized that, man, we're going to have to pay this guy some sort of contract to keep him. And they realize they got other issues on the horizon of players they got to pay and figure out too. And, you know, they already had a, you know, what do I want to say? A lot of riches at that position, to where I think they felt like, okay, if we got to lose one guy, maybe this is the guy we lose. And they went with it. But hey, I'm not mad at you. Chris Jones is the man, in my opinion.
Titans at 8, Jack Conklin back in 2016. Good pick. Like DeForest Buckner, he's no longer with his team. He wasn't traded, free agent. He'll now be starting a tackle for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. So Tennessee at 8 is up next.
Yeah, you know, and with Jack Conklin, I questioned at the time whether he was the top 10 pick. I never saw him like that. I thought he was certainly a first rounder, but I was a little surprised by that pick. But regardless, this is where I'm going, Michael Thomas. You know, this is where just the big body, the physicality, the 50-50 balls. And really the most important thing is the fearlessness over the middle. You know, it's just rare to be a wide receiver who is fearless like a Gronk tight end down the middle. He just doesn't care. He's unaffected by people around him. If somebody tries to knock his head off, he almost seems like he likes it and likes getting up and being like, oh, you can't hurt me. And he flexes his muscles. So he brings an attitude to their passing game. And a toughness to their offense, I think, in general, to where you can't just look at the Saints and go, oh, it's all about the passing game and passing numbers and sexiness. No, you know, they run the football, they play physical, and they expect the receivers to block. And Michael Thomas does everything and is really a really, really awesome football player all around. And he's got to be in the top 10. I knew that. I didn't put it,
sure.
You know. Yes. I mean, he's got to be in the top 10. Right.
Just like I did with the 49ers at 7, I went same position, maybe just a little bit better. It was Chris Jones instead of DeForest Buckner a moment ago. I'm going Ronnie Stanley now instead of Jack Conklin. Conklin, good, nice player, but Stanley, first team All-Pro. So they kind of get what they were looking for and hoping for, and someone they can hang on to and pay instead of unfortunately decide to let him go on to the next spot. Bears at 9, and this is where we start getting into some misses here, Chris. The Bears at 9 and the New York Giants at 10 would like these selections back. So who's your suggestion for Chicago at 9?
Yeah, it didn't work out for Leonard Floyd. Leonard Floyd, a good player, but not a top 10 pick. I mean, and that's what stinks for guys like this sometimes. You know, we look at them and go, oh, they underperformed or whatever it may be. And you want to go, no, they were actually really good. It's just, you know, the GM and the front office overvalued him a little bit and picked him a little too early to now, you know, the perception is he hasn't lived up to the billing. And, you know, that's unfortunate for him, but that's the price of doing business. I'm going DeForest Buckner here, though. This is where I am going to go DeForest. He does make my top 10. You know, again, to be 6'7", that powerful, that athletic. And again, another one of those guys, you know, maybe not as versatile as Chris Jones, but still versatile in the fact where he can play defensive end or three technique that way and be a mismatch for a guard or a tackle on a given down or scenario. That so, you know, there's a reason that Chris Ballard and company paid him $22 million. They're just, he's a tree trunk. There's not many people you'll ever see in your life as big as DeForest Buckner and also be able to move that way.
I made the prediction after we both had Carson Wentz going number one to the Rams, and that would be the last time we agreed. Here, well, I was off because I had DeForest Buckner going to the Bears at 9 as well. And the one thing I have written besides his name is, who's the best front seven difference maker or disruptor at this pick? Because that's clearly what they were looking for with Floyd. And I think you pointed out, well, good player, okay player, but not worth the number 9 pick. So it's a different position. He's up front instead of an outside linebacker. But if you're looking for a real disruptor in the front seven, I think he's the best one left on our board.
I think so. And, you know, to go back to that time, too, Vic Fangio is the defensive coordinator, I believe.
That's right.
In that first year there, right?
Yeah.
So he would believe in that. Or Maybe I'm wrong. That might have been John Fox, right? At that point.
Was Foxy still there at 16?
I think he was. I think 16 was his last year, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm wrong by a year there. I'm trying to remember on the fly, but I'm pretty sure he was still there in 16.
Okay.
Let's see. What was Trubisky's? Trubisky's rookie year was 17, right?
That was 17, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, Fox was there because Fox was there for Trubisky's rookie year, right? So, but either way, your point's real. And Fox, he knows a thing or two about defensive linemen and disruptors, and because I had to play him against them when he was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, and they had a lot of those big, freaky guys there.
Bringing us to the last pick, the Giants at 10. They would like a big-time do-over. They took Eli Apple, cornerback, Ohio State. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that's not your pick. Who is?
No. No, and I didn't like that pick at the time. You know, I didn't. In fact, I think the Giants really wanted to take, I believe, Jack Conklin and Leonard Floyd. Really, that's who they had their eyes on. The problem is everybody in the NFL also knew that's who the Giants wanted to pick. I don't know what went on that year, but the rumors were going around that that's who they wanted, and it ended up being true. And I think some of these teams knew that, and they got off the board. So number 10, I'm going to – the old gas mask man on draft night. You remember the gas mask man on draft night?
Oh, yeah.
Laramie Tunsil. Yes, our new $22 million left tackle for the Houston Texans. But, you know, again, Laramie Tunsil, if you remember correctly, right, he was, you know, looked at as a top five pick, and then those pictures came out, and it really hurt his draft stock a little bit. But regardless, he's rebounded nicely. And you know, he's not as good as Ronnie Stanley, but he's in the conversation with Ronnie Stanley as far as a pass protector is concerned. This is definitely one of the best pass protecting left tackles in football. The run game, there's a little bit more there to be desired from him. But nonetheless, as you and I both know, you know, the tackle position is paramount to having a good football team, especially with all the freaks we see at defense end and outside linebacker right now. And Tunsil, he can stand in there with the best of them.
I had Tunsil written down here, but I crossed him out, Chris. I'm kind of glad I did since you went with him. And I went Jalen Ramsey here. They were looking for a corner. Okay. Didn't work out with Eli Apple. So, I mean, a talent like Jalen Ramsey around at 10 probably wouldn't happen in the real world. I think you had him going at 4 to the Cowboys.
I did.
As we redid this draft. But there's no way he makes it out of the top 10. So I give him to the New York Giants at number 10.
Yeah.
There's another redraft.
You know, I like these. These are fun exercises.
It's fun.
It gets us, lets us hit on a few players that maybe we wouldn't talk about all the time too, and just lets us discuss them. But I don't know if you noticed, you know, I had no Derrick Henry, no Zeke Elliott, which I could not believe. I just looked at it and I just went, I think if I was going to rank these players for, you know, one to however many, or Jared Goff, he's not in there.
Yeah, no Jared Goff.
Yeah, you didn't have them either. I just would sit there and you go, you know, I just don't think they're worthy of top 10 player consideration in this draft. The Derrick Henry, Zeke Elliott conversation, very good. I could be wrong there. I'm not saying I'm right. I get it. But I just looked at some of these other guys and just went, man, I think they're better players at their position and every bit as valuable, maybe greater than they were. And, you know, that it hurt me not to have Derrick Henry and Zeke Elliott there because I do like them as players.
Did you decide going in, and you know, you probably did it somewhat similar to me. You look at the top 10. Oh, there's a lot of good picks. You go through the whole draft and write down the other good ones. Did you look at that group and say, you know what, I'm not going running back here? Or did you get done with your list and you're like, oh, shit, I didn't have Henry or Elliott?
Yeah, so what I've been doing with these is I just go through the whole draft and I just keep writing names down of anybody that I think's even in the fringe or on the radar to be a top guy, top 10, top 20, and I just continue to write those down. So that's what I do more times than not. And as I got going, hold on, I'm switching my ear pods, as you can see, because they're dying out, so I'm charging one at a time now. But yeah, I kind of went through like that, and I wrote Ezekiel Elliott and Derrick Henry down very early on in my original preliminary list. But then when I started to have to go, okay, let me get in the top 10, I just couldn't come to bring myself and say that they were better players than some of the guys we had on this list. So, You know, it's certainly debatable. I get it. You know, it also hurt me just to throw out some other names like no Xavier Howard, who I think the world of. I think Xavier Howard is a corner for the Miami Dolphins, who's one of the two or three highest paid at the position of football. He's a phenomenal football player that I thought about putting on here. Miles Jack, the middle linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was another one that I went and went, damn, am I really going to leave Miles Jack out of the top 10? Because I think he's in the conversation for one of the best middle linebacker in football, Paul. I'm a huge fan of his. So I think those are the two that I looked at, you know, other than the two running backs right off the bat. And maybe even Yannick Ngakoue in that conversation, too, is the next guy that would have been available to me on the list. Yeah, Pete did a little is writing in about Kevin Byard there. He just sent us a text as we're sitting in there. And you know, I like Byard. He's had a great career, and especially for being a fourth-round pick. But, I don't think he warrants a top 10 pick. I don't think he's that good.
You know, you said a couple of times that I'm not mad at you. How mad at me would you have been if I would have given Jared Goff to the Bears? Because I thought long and hard about it.
Did you really?
I did. That would have been fun.
Because I would have crapped all over that pick. I would have been like, oh, I would have had a lot of fun with that. That would have been good. But I'm glad.
However,
yeah, let me tell you your thought process. How did it go down?
So I crossed him out because when I wrote him down, I initially thought, you know, this is a chance to get a quarterback who's in between 12 and 16 in the NFL. And like I talked about with Dak, you take him at 5, you're not getting one of the 5 best quarterbacks, but you're getting a top 10 quarterback, and you pounce on that opportunity. But then after going through all my rankings 1 through 32, I didn't have Jared Goff in the top half. I had him a little bit closer to 20, so that led me to cross him off.
Look at you making rankings and stuff now. Look at you. I mean, I'm really starting to rub off on you. I like this.
I was already up late doing the redraft, so I thought I'd go deep on the whole Dak Prescott thing. So you cost me sleep trying to keep up with you, but it was fun. So
good.
I have something new for you, Chris. Are you ready for this? I mean, it is the middle of May.
I'm really excited about it. I actually was like kind of wanted to start the podcast out with this when I first heard about it. So
okay.
I'm very excited for it.
Okay. So we're calling this Quarterback Jeopardy. And if you're into it, and if you like it even just a little bit, we can keep it around and change up the specific category for quarterbacks we go here. But this is how it's going to work. I have 5 questions. And my category for this very first version of Quarterback Jeopardy is quarterback class of 2003.
Ooh.
Okay? You were one of 13 quarterbacks taken. And I'm going to be my parent here. I'm going to use my dad voice. You can't dial up 2003 draft history and look at it right now. You promise?
You can't have it.
Okay. Nowhere. All right.
Promise.
Very good.
Yep. I'll keep them right
questions.
Here just so you can see. Yep.
Okay. So I have 5 and it's escalating difficulty. 100 points for the first one, all the way down to 500 for what I think is the toughest. And 400 and 500 are very tough, Chris. Do not be upset.
I'm nervous.
If you don't get
Paul,
these right. And don't be too mad at me.
I value myself as a football historian. So I really am. I'm nervous. The butterflies are going. I'm pumped. Let's do it.
Well, it's going to be a mix of kind of easy because it's your class where you were one of 13, but there are some pretty fun things to work in here. So 100 points, the easiest one. Who was the other left-handed quarterback taken in 2003?
Dave Ragone out of Louisville.
Yep. You got 100 points, big boy. Way to go.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
you hit the layup, you're off and running. All right. For 200, 4 quarterbacks were taken in round 1. Name them and where they went.
Okay. Carson Palmer, Cincinnati Bengals.
Yep.
Byron Leftwich, Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes.
Kyle Bowler, Baltimore Ravens. And Rex Grossman,
there.
Chicago Bears.
300 points. He hasn't even broken a sweat.
I'll never forget that. I mean, I was pissed off I wasn't part of that group. I mean, that'll
and now you're
fucking
almost
live
mad
with me
now.
Forever.
You're 39. Are you still mad?
Yes, I am. I'm still mad. Really thought I'm still pissed at Baltimore for taking Kyle Bowler over me. You know, I am, and I like
Kyler. Did you think they were going to take you?
I thought there was a chance, but I realized as we were getting close to the draft that I wasn't hearing anything for them, so I was out of it. But I wanted to be like, damn, I mean, Kyler Bowler threw more interceptions than touchdowns in college, and they took him over me. I was hurt by that. Yeah. And then the Raiders had the last two picks of the first round, and I really thought the Raiders were going to take me with one of those last two picks. Al Who Davis, just my conversation with him was just – it went so well, and – this is the part of your Jeopardy questions, right? Because I'm going to blank on the name. They took a Colorado linebacker. Okay, good. A Colorado linebacker, and I'm – oh, man, I can't remember his name. Damn. I want to say they took a corner and a Colorado linebacker, and I hope Pete DeMolitis is looking this up, but I can't remember guys they put. Yeah, good. I can't remember.
But they didn't take you. How about the Bears when they took Grossman at 22? Did you have any sense that might be for you?
I did. I thought there was a chance that I would go to the Chicago Bears. And here's a funny story. I went to the Chicago Bears, and a guy, John Shoup, is the they took Nnamdi Asamoah, and then Tyler Braden, I believe, or something like that, the last two picks.
Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. But so I'm with the Bears, and they have the first round pick, and I know they like me, and they're telling me all the right things, and I know they're trying to figure out me or two other guys. I don't know who it was. Obviously, Rex Grossman was one of them. And this will be one thing that I'll never forget. John Shoup, the quarterback coach, who ended up being my quarterback coach in Tampa Bay like 2 years after that, he goes, hey, let's put on a game from last year you had at University of Texas, and let's go back and watch the film of it. He goes, I don't want any of these cupcake games. And I don't know why, but because he said that, I didn't pick any of my good games. I threw for 450 yards against Nebraska and had all these big statistical games. And for some reason I thought, well, maybe he thinks that was like a cakewalk game. And we were in Lincoln and Nebraska was like a top 20 team or top 15 team. And I picked a team against Kansas State. It was really good that year. And you'll remember Terrence Newman and Darren Sproles and that team, right? But it wasn't like a great game by me. It was more of like a gutty game that we had a win on the road, and I threw two clutch touchdowns, but you know, the rest of the game was kind of ugly and they had a good defense. And I still don't know why the fuck I showed him that game. I had all these other games of 5 touchdowns, 6 touchdowns. And he even said something to me a few years later when he came to Tampa Bay and asked me why I showed him that game. And of course I just gave you the answer why, and I just overthought it. Stupid.
You fell for his trap, man. You fell for it.
Stupid. Man. I don't know what I was thinking.
The things we did when we're 22, right?
Exactly right. Exactly.
Good. Okay. You are 2 for 2, though. So that's good. We've got 3 left here. For 300 points, you were the 6th quarterback taken in that class. Who was the 7th?
Right. Oh, my gosh. Hold on a second here. I think Seneca Wallace.
There you go. Very well done.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Yeah.
You haven't missed. He was a good player, by the way. He was good.
He was a good player. I got to see him up close in person, you know, because Texas, we played Iowa State. And he was he could do it all. I mean, he was an awesome college quarterback and really had a really good NFL career and hung around and was a great backup for a long, long time.
Okay, the two hardest ones. If you get both of these, I'm going to feel badly, okay? I want to stump you at least once.
Okay.
So for 400 points, you're on the line, Chris. 4 quarterbacks from your class are currently coaching in the NFL. Which ones and where are they?
Oh, wow, you went. All right, so Byron Leftwich is – wow, 4. All right, so Byron Leftwich is with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dave Ragone's with the Chicago Bears.
Yes.
Okay. Now, after that, Kyle Bowler's not with a team. Carson Palmer's not with a team. Seneca Wallace is with a team, isn't he? And I just don't know who it is.
If he is, I don't know it because he wasn't one of my 4.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Don't tell me. Okay. Hold on. Let me just think. I'm missing somebody else later on in the draft. I know I am. Damn, who am I missing? Okay, I give up. I'm not going to sit here all day. Who is it?
So the obvious one, I thought, with Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach.
Oh, my gosh. Jeez.
So there's that one. And the final pick of the last quarterback taken, Ken Dorsey, who's coaching quarterbacks in Buffalo.
He's up in Buffalo. Okay. That was the one I was going. I know I'm forgetting somebody in the later rounds. It was Ken Dorsey I was thinking about. Totally forgot about Cliff Kingsbury. And what an idiot. Right? I mean, I only played him in college. I mean, I don't know how I can forget it. But damn, I should have got that. I'm pissed off.
And was drafted by the Patriots, too. Seems like a long time ago. Okay, yeah. You're 3 out of 4. And I'm going to apologize right now for this one because this is not just worth 500. This should be worth 1,000. So I didn't make this up. This is based in truth, but it's a very difficult one, the last one. One team selected two quarterbacks back in 2003. Name the team and the quarterbacks.
Wow. So one, let's see. Let me just see here. Damn, did the Redskins take two quarterbacks? I mean, the Bears take two quarterbacks that year? No.
We've already mentioned one of the quarterbacks. We've mentioned one of the quarterbacks two times already. His name has come up in two different categories.
So Byron Leftwich, and nope, it wasn't him. Okay, because I thought we came up with him in two different categories. No. Who the hell am I missing here? Hold on. Don't tell me yet. I don't care. They can cut out the minutiae of the delay time here. Say the question to me one more time. Let me hear it one more time. Let me just make sure I got this here.
Yes. One team selected two quarterbacks in 2003. Name the team and the quarterbacks. Do you want me to give you one of them? Even knowing one of them, it's still going to be.
Okay, go ahead. Give me one of them. Go.
Okay, the one that we've mentioned is Dave Ragone.
So the Houston, and he went to the Houston Texans that year, right? Okay. Yep. Damn, and who else did they take that year? They took somebody else later on.
After you.
Oh, okay.
Yes, after you. Big name.
Is that a big name?
Big name. Think about, let's see. Think about baseball.
I can't think of it. Go ahead. I'm giving up, but give me another hint. Let me see if I can guess it. Go ahead.
Baseball.
Wow. I don't know who. Tom Brady?
Drew Henson.
Oh, that's who you're talking about. I was going to say Drew. I thought of Drew Henson. I did. You know, I don't remember him being in that draft class. That's crazy. I had totally forgot that. So he got drafted by them, went and played baseball, and then the Dallas Cowboys signed him a few years later after that. That's how that went down.
Yeah, it's a bit wonky because he never played for them. So baseball must have, I don't remember the details. Baseball must have come in there. He must have done that long enough where his rights went somewhere else. Because, yeah, I mean, he ended up playing for the Cowboys.
Yeah. I mean, when you said Tom Brady, I was like, wait, was there another Tom Brady in my draft class and I didn't even know it? Like, I thought that you were playing a joke on me. I didn't even know. Damn. All right. I got 3 out of 5. I like this game. I like it. I'm down for it.
I'm going to keep it going. I've got some other categories on the back burner here that are going to keep me up late at night.
Good. They're just the right amount of hard, too. Like, I should have got all 5 of those. But I'm blonde, and I smoke too many daddy cigars, and sometimes my brain forgets itself, okay? So that's a little bit of an issue.
I'm going to call it a win.
Okay.
You get
60%. Man.
That's good. So off to a running start.
All right.
I got nothing else
today,
for you, pal.
That's awesome. It. Hey, we did it. We had a good pod. We hit it all today. We did. We had lots of good conversation. And
that's a May 12th podcast.
Yeah, it was really well done. And thanks to you for some of the ideas you threw out there to make the podcast better. Thursday, we'll be back in the fold again. You're not in on Thursday, right, Paulie? I got Ahmed. Is that right on Thursday?
That is correct. Yep.
All right. Well, I'll miss you because I like you a lot, but I like Ahmed
too, buddy.
So
next week,
there's only so much of me to go around. Okay. but Thursday, We'll hit all the news and notes going on around the NFL. We'll have a few creative things to do. And the big effer, Big Phil, will be on the Thursday podcast as usual. Who knows what he'll talk about? We never know. He has a big mouth, and he's frustrated he can't talk more on a weekly basis as is. Paul, you the man. Good stuff today, dude.
Good to see you, pal.
Everybody be good out there. Be safe. Peace out till next time. See ya.